Today's episode is sponsored by One Medical, a modern primary care benefit employees use and love. Their mission is to make quality care more affordable, accessible, and enjoyable for all through a blend of human-centered design, technology, and an exceptional team.
People are experiencing a lot of psychological stress. It's been prolonged over a long period of time. It will have a profound impact not only on their mental health and their physical health now, but for the months and perhaps even years to come. We can create environments where we can help people to manage that stress, we can help people to manage that distress, and ultimately not only provide an environment where people are more likely to be healthy, but also an environment that is going to be productive.
That's Dr. Arthur Evans, CEO of the American Psychological Association. A clinical psychologist, innovator, and leader, Dr. Evans' life's work has been dedicated to improving the mental health of communities, including those that have historically been marginalized. Prior to his role at the helm of the APA, Dr. Evans was the commissioner of Philadelphia's Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability Services, where his work became a national and international model. I'm Ellen Kelsey, and this is the Business Group on Health podcast, conversations with experts about the most important health and well-being issues facing employers. Today, Dr. Evans and I are going to discuss mental health and ways employers can lend their support. Dr. Evans, welcome. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
All right. Well, let's get right into it. Your organization has released a study that is just so impressive called the Stress in America Survey, and would love to ask you a number of questions related to that and notably some findings coming out of that survey. So let's maybe just start with what's happened to our collective mental health over the past year or so.
You know, we do the Stress in America survey each year to look at the stress levels in the nation and to understand what's driving those stressors and to really help to educate the public about the importance of stress on our overall health. During the pandemic, we've done that stress survey every few months just to see how the stress levels were changing. And what we saw was that the stress levels went up after the pandemic started. They stayed pretty high, and it's starting to have a real impact on our health status. For example, in our latest survey, we found that about 60% of Americans are experiencing unwanted weight changes, about 40% gaining weight, and about 20% losing weight. And for those who are gaining weight, have undesired weight gain, the average is about 29 pounds. We saw that people are experiencing sleep disturbances. Some people are saying they're sleeping more than they want. Others are saying that they are sleeping less than they would like to. And that's about 2/3 of Americans. We saw that people are drinking more to cope with the stress that they are under as a result of the pandemic. About 1/4 of Americans are saying that, and people are engaged in less physical activity. So all of this is making two really important points. One is that Americans are experiencing stress related to the pandemic. It's been prolonged stress over the course of a year, but it's also pointing out the inextricable tie between our physical health and our mental health. These kinds of changes will have long-term or could have long-term implications for our physical health as well as our mental health.
I think that point you just made is so important because this isn't just a point in time and once you're no longer stressed, everything is fine and you kind of hit a reset button. These are long-term, really correlated psychological and physical manifestations that will persist and will take some time to perhaps recalibrate and to get back to a healthier, sustainable level. So I appreciate you underscoring that point in your remarks. And I also wanted to ask about another finding in your survey that our team just found so interesting. You know, we know that it's widely reported that the pandemic has taken a toll on women, and in particular mothers, many of whom have left the workforce or are dealing with the brunt of homeschooling and other childcare issues. But your survey really shined a light on the toll that it's taken on fathers, which is something that we don't often hear about or is often discussed. So we'd love to hear more specifically what your survey found as it relates to fathers.
Yeah, well, you know, to talk about parents generally, and then drill down a little bit on fathers in particular. Parents in general are experiencing stress, but we also know that parents of young children who are engaged in remote learning are experiencing even more stress. One of the interesting facts, though, was that fathers indicated that they could have used more emotional support than mothers. For fathers, it was in the 80% range, and for mothers, it was around the 60% range. So that was somewhat surprising to us that fathers are indicating that they could use more emotional support.
And let's also talk about the kids. What did your survey find about the mental well-being of children and young adults?
Well, we didn't look specifically at kids, but we did look at people across the lifespan. And what our survey showed is a finding that we've found in almost all of our surveys, which is for people who are in the young adult age range, that they're experiencing a lot more stress than people who are much older. And in fact, it is a linear relationship that the older you are, the less stress or the fewer people are reporting significant amounts of stress, with older adults, seniors reporting the least amount of stress. And Gen Z, that's the age range from about 18 to 23, experiencing the most stress. And significantly, those who are in college in that age range are experiencing the highest levels of stress. So, you know, we suspect that what's happening is that for many of us who have lived through 9/11, through economic downturns, we've learned how to go through and have experience going through those things. But you can imagine coming out, you're graduating, you're looking for your first job, and you're in this huge economic downturn in the middle of a pandemic. It's extremely stressful for young adults. And I think for employers who have a lot of employees in that age range, I think they should be aware of that. And for employers who have parents of children who are in that age range, you can expect that they are experiencing a lot of stress as well.
Yeah, that's so important. And I think that's, you know, the generation that is soon to be entering the workforce if they're not already in it, and just, you know, the unique and acute needs that they're experiencing right now are exacerbated above and beyond the very acute needs that the workforce at large is experiencing right now in this space. So I'm glad that you've called that out in particular. Another area that your survey focuses on is really, I guess I would call it the impact of double trauma that communities of color are facing right now, not just the pandemic of COVID-19, but also the pandemic of racism. And I would love for you to talk a little bit more about that double trauma and how that is really impacting the mental health of communities of color in particular.
Yeah, you know, at APA, we talk about this being a syndemic, meaning that it's not just a pandemic, but we have these other layering issues that are exacerbating the impact of the pandemic. One of the things we found out really early on was that communities of color, particularly African Americans, Latinx communities, Native American communities, were having a significant disparities in terms of the impact. And then when you look at the issue of the racial injustice issues that have arisen over the last several months with the George Floyd killing and, you know, a number of these other incidents, those things have a cumulative effect on people in the workforce. The more recent anti-Asian violence, again, those are additive to the stressors that we're all experiencing. And, you know, it shows up in our survey as well. You know, we asked a question about people's concern about the future. African Americans have the highest levels of concerns about the future as we look to how we return to the work environment after the pandemic. So our surveys consistently show that African Americans, for example, have higher stress levels than the rest of the population. And we're seeing that during the pandemic as well.
And, you know, this is a population that pre-pandemic already had challenges with access and attaining culturally competent care in many areas, and in particular in the area of mental health and emotional well-being. So would love to hear how you and the APA are promoting culturally competent care and really does think about this double trauma, so to speak.
You know, the issue of cultural differences is so important in healthcare. We know that it's a two-sided equation. It's not just the experience of people who are experiencing day-to-day traumas and day-to-day discrimination, but it's also the perceptions of the people who are in the healthcare world who are providing services and the implicit biases that they may have, and sometimes explicit, but you know, I think that most of what happens are unconscious biases that we all carry. And so we really are working on both sides of that equation. That is really trying to help people and communities of color with addressing the trauma and the stressors that those communities often feel, but also in terms of trying to help professionals who might be providing care to make sure that they can understand the impact that, you know, living in a society that has inherent biases, how those can play out in terms of providing care that is not always the optimal care for individuals. I also think that it's important to recognize that some of the challenges that we face are not just interpersonal, that they are systemic. They have to do with the way we've designed systems. They have to deal with where we have services. When I was a commissioner of mental health, you know, one of the things that we looked at, services were actually located in communities. And what we found is that often those services were not in the communities in places that were accessible. So, you know, beyond the interpersonal issues, we also have to be aware of some of the structural issues that might get in the way of people getting access to the services that they need. But I think beyond all of that, I think one of the real messages that we try to convey is that these issues are real. A social psychologist by the name of Dr. David Williams is at Harvard. He's done studies that have shown that and documented that people that in communities of color, where there has been what is perceived as an unjustified police shooting, that has a direct impact on the mental health status of people in those communities in ways that you don't see when there may be a shooting, but it's not viewed as unjustified. So what does that tell us? It tells us that parts of our community, parts of our society are experiencing these traumas where if they believe that their community is being dealt with unjustly, that it has a direct impact on their health. And so one of the main messages that we try to convey is that these kinds of events are real, they have a real impact, and that we have and bear a collective responsibility to address them.
Well, it's also important, and talk about how timely and relevant it is as we sit here today with current events and a lot of the social injustices that are going on all around us. And I, again, appreciate you illuminating that point, that there are some very significant needs that are unique to certain populations, and they're very real and very contemporary today. And so I really do appreciate you underscoring that.
Mental and behavioral health issues affect millions of Americans. One out of every five people in the U.S. will be diagnosed with a mental health condition, and 57% of those won't receive any treatment. People bounce between providers and mental health resources with little to no guidance around how to find appropriate care. That's why we've launched Mindset by One Medical, a virtual first program with coaching, therapy, and group sessions, with the exceptional One Medical primary care experience. Same or next day, in person or over video, your employees can get care quickly and avoid the typical wait to see a mental health provider. We improve clinical outcomes so your people are healthier, happier, and more productive. We reduce costs for companies by preventing unnecessary specialist visits and out-of-network referrals. One Medical is here to help your team feel their best emotionally, because mental well-being is essential to overall health and wellness.
Let's talk about these issues broadly and the correlation to productivity and performance. You know, obviously, our audience are largely employers and their industry partners who are supporting them and deploying solutions and programs to support the workforce. So how should our audience think about when these issues go unaddressed or when they're not robustly addressed? How does that manifest and play out from a productivity and performance perspective?
The big message here is that mental health is inextricably tied to our overall health, and our overall health is inextricably tied to how we perform in the workplace. We have lots of data around that, and particularly around mental health issues. We do an award called the Psychologically Healthy Workplace that is based on research that shows what the correlates of good workforce performance are. And it lays out, you know, five dimensions that are really important and are related to high performing organizations. The other thing is that we know that mental health and the kind of work environment that we create, whether it's a psychologically healthy work environment, is related to things like absenteeism. It's related to retention. It's related to presenteeism. You know, when people are in the workplace, but they may not be as productive as they can. So the way we view mental health in the workplace is it's not only a good thing to do from a value standpoint, but it's directly related to a company's performance and ultimately their bottom line.
And Dr. Evans, you just mentioned the psychologically healthy workplaces and the five dimensions. Would love to hear you expand on that a bit more. And what are those five dimensions?
We look at five domains for those companies. So one of them, the first domain has to do with employee engagement. We know that companies that engage their employees systematically do better. You know, for example, in our organization, we do a whole variety of things to engage our employees, everything from small things like having our staff meetings as opposed to managers, to weekly chats with me, the CEO, to involving people in work groups and committees that can help shape our policies. All of those kinds of things are really important in terms of employee involvement. Secondly, workplace and work-life balance, really important. You know, we were talking earlier about parents and the stressors that parents are experiencing, particularly those who are working in the home and trying to manage their children's learning as well. Well, those kinds of stressors have an impact on, you know, not only people's health, but it's also on their ability to perform in the workplace. And so organizations that take that into account and try to help their employees are going to fare much better. We do things like mental health days, especially during the pandemic. It's interesting that, you know, we thought that our productivity would go down. In fact, our productivity probably went up, but there was a cost to that because people were working at such a high level. And so what we did as we started to notice this is to say, look, we need people to dial it back, to bring it down a couple of notches, mental health days to really signal to people that we really need them to protect their mental health. So work-life balance, employee growth and development, another important area where organizations that can invest in the development and growth of their employees are going to do better. Health and safety, making sure that people have a robust set of healthcare benefits, making sure that the environment is safe. One of the things that I did and we did as a management team during the pandemic is to lead every single message that we sent to our staffs with the idea that this decision, what we have prioritized is your health and safety. And then we started to talk about whatever the decision was. And so when we surveyed our staff later in the year about how things were going, and one of the questions we asked is about, you know, does an organization care about our health and safety? You know, the people overwhelmingly said yes. And And part of that was being very intentional about signaling the importance of people's health and safety in terms of our decision making. And then finally, employee recognition, that organizations that are very intentional about recognizing staff, rewarding staff for those things that are consistent with their mission and values tend to do better. So those five dimensions are related to how organizations do and how organizations can create that kind of healthy work environment.
So much that you just said was terrific. I was writing notes, and I love the point you made about signaling health and safety and the role that it played in being a priority in your organizational decision making and communicating that to your team and how important that is and was to them. And also the point you made about dialing it back, and too much productivity may not, it gets to a point where it might not be productive, and it could be encroaching on burning out. So the dialing it back and knowing when to do that and doing it thoughtfully is so important as well.
Yeah, it's counterintuitive that a CEO would be telling their staff to not be as productive. But the reason that I took that position and had several conversations with my management team about how do we signal to people that we don't want them working at 100% or that high, is that over the long term, it's going to be detrimental to their health. It's going to be detrimental to our productivity, and ultimately, it's going to lead to burnout. And so, my messaging was, look, we can't have you working at 100% over a long period of time. You need to dial it back a little bit, because inevitably, and we've seen this during the pandemic, we're going to have times when we're going to need to surge. We're going to need to do more. We're going to have to respond to something. And organizations that have people flat out all of the time have very little ability to do that without dropping something off of the plate that they may not have intended to. So from a management standpoint, making sure that people are working at a reasonable level, that we can surge when we need to surge, and ultimately that we are working at a pace that is that allows us to manage over the long haul, is going to be really important. And so we sent that message, and I think it was received well. I think people were surprised, but I think ultimately people appreciated that we were thinking about their long-term health over getting a few more papers or something out the door.
I love it. And I think to your point around the surge, and leaving some reserve energy in your tank for when you do need to surge, and making sure that you're rested and prepared for when that moment comes is so, so critically important. So I love that you did that and set the example that you did. And I think all these, five dimensions of domains are things that employers can be doing, or many already are doing, and could continue to expand their work in, and would love to maybe shift to employers as they think about returning to the office at some point for those who have been working virtually. What recommendations do you have as we think about the psychological readiness of the workforce to return, and the fear and trepidation that many do have about leaving their homes and coming back into a workplace? Any words of wisdom or tricks and tips that you would offer to employers as they navigate that and trying to support their workforce?
Well, leaders are going to have to spend as much time preparing their staff as they are preparing their physical building. I know people are going to be thinking about what the new physical environment is going to be looking like, but as much thought has to go into how do you prepare people to come back into this environment. I would say for any leader that it is important to understand what people just experienced. We've experienced a collective trauma as a nation. It's had a profound impact on our physical health and our mental health. And we know that from a lot of research that when people are under prolonged stress, we all experience stress and stressors in day to day, but we experience stress and it goes away. What we've experienced is something like nothing that I've experienced in my lifetime, which is a year of significant amount of uncertainty, significant amount of stress. That's going to have an impact. The other thing that leaders need to be aware of is that coming back to work for maybe perceived by many as a very positive event. But we also know from a lot of stress research that positive events can be as stressful as events that we perceive as negative. So you think about weddings or having a baby or moving to a new home. Those are generally positive events, but they're also very stressful events. So even for people who perceive returning to work as a positive event, this is going to be additional stress on people who have experienced stress over a long period of time. You have a new set of transitions that people are going to have to go through. And so I think having that mindset that I have a stressed workforce, return to work is going to add to that stress. Many of the people returning to work are now going to have to figure out what they do with their children if their children are still doing remote working, or during the summer, what am I going to do with my child because the programs that would have typically been in place are not going to be open. Those are going to be added stressors that people need to think about. So a few things that we know from psychological research that can help. One is that one of the things that causes a lot of stress is uncertainty. So the more uncertainty you can remove from people, the better people are going to fare. So for example, during the pandemic, one of the things that we were very intentional about is using very long time frames for our decision making. We did that because we wanted people to have some sense of what was going to happen over the next 6 months. So when we made a decision to stay virtual, for example, we made those in, you know, 6 month increments. So, you know, you don't have to worry about your children's childcare or whatever if you're going to be working remotely. And we aligned our decision making around the school year because we knew that that was going to be the biggest challenge that our workforce had. And people really appreciated that. You know, back in April of last year, people knew that their kids, that they were going to be in virtual work environment through the summer. And so they didn't have to worry about that. It just took that level of uncertainty off. So I'm using that as an example. Anything that you can do to reduce the uncertainty of the workforce, that helps. The other thing is that the psychological sense of control is very important. One of the things that the pandemic does is it, you know, we don't feel like we're in control because we're not in control of a lot of things. So the more decisions that you can put in people's hands, the more choices that you can give people, again, the better they're going to fare. And it can be something as simple as, you know, at one point we had people's personal belongings delivered to them to their homes after it was clear that we were going to be in virtual mode for a very long time. And so we gave some people, you know, the choice, you could come to the building and pick up your things, or you could have them delivered to your home. A small thing, but the more things that we can do to signal to people that they do have choice and options, and things aren't just happening to them. I talked earlier about engagement. If there's a way to engage people in the decision-making process or to survey people so that their voices are heard, you know, all of those kinds of things help. And I think leaders who are aware of that are probably going to fare much better than those who are not. And one other thing I want to say about leadership, you know, we know that one of the most important things you can do as a leader is to communicate consistently and clearly and transparently over a period of time. So clear messages, you have to over communicate. One of the things that happens when you're stressed is you have more cognitive load that makes it difficult for people to process information. And so in that environment, it's really important to make sure that you are over communicating so that those messages get through to folks. And so making those, you know, having that clear, consistent messaging and being transparent about it, telling people what you do know, what you don't know. And what I tell people is, if I do know something and I can't tell you, I will even tell you that. But you know that what you're hearing from me is the best information that I can give you at this particular point.
Okay, that's so helpful. I think could serve us all well as we navigate the next many months as we all think about potentially reemerging, leaving our homes and whether we go back to work full-time or part-time or in some sort of new schedule. These are all really important and important regardless. It's not just return to work. I think it's any critical moment in an organizational evolution, and just good communication and empathetic leadership that could serve all of us well, no matter what the situation is. So thank you for shedding some light on all of that. Dr. Evans, thanks again for joining us. Really appreciate your perspective.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
I've been speaking with Dr. Arthur Evans, CEO of the American Psychological Association. You can find the Stress in America report on the APA's website at www.apa.org. I'm Ellen Kelsey, and this is the Business Group on Health podcast, conversations with experts on the most relevant issues facing employers today. Please consider sharing with a friend or a colleague. Thanks for listening.